I talk to people all the time. Someone even told me once they thought I'd be a good talk show host.
Really?
Yeah, a couple of people. How do you get that, though? Where do you start? You can't just walk into a building and say, I want to be a talk show host.
I wouldn't think so.
It's all politics.
The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Not only do we have The Big Lead coming up, but later on this hour, we'll give away a pair of Mariners tickets to the July 20th Mariners game against the Angels, so stay tuned for that. But first,
The Big Lead, top trending.
Big story coming out of the Washington Post. ICE and the FBI are using state driver's license photos for facial recognition scans. This has privacy advocates highly concerned. Agents from Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the FBI are scanning through millions and millions of American photos without their consent or knowledge, according to the Washington Post. This cache of internal documents and emails from ICE and the FBI were obtained by Georgetown Law Center on Privacy and Technology and provided the paper trail provided show federal investigators have turned the State Department of Motor Vehicle databases into the bedrock of an unprecedented surveillance infrastructure, according to the Post. Law enforcement uses DNA and fingerprints regularly, but DMV records hold photos of large numbers of state residents who have not been charged with a crime. ICE's use of driver's license databases for facial recognition comes amid increased calls from the Trump administration to use immigration raids to identify and prosecute undocumented immigrants. Trump said last month his administration would launch a series of raids sometime after the 4th of July, and the acting Homeland Security Secretary said on Sunday defended that practice. So here's the thing. They are government records. So when I read about this and I saw that there was this expectation of privacy with the picture, you're turning your picture over to the government. I kind of assumed that the government would probably be looking at it for more than my driver's license. It's like, hey, what's that guy's address? You know, they're going to be able to get it, and they're using it for other things. Now, we should point out that Washington State has some laws in place where they're going to have to get a court order before they're going to be able to look through our license database. So don't, you know, panic about your photograph or your photograph being an invasion of privacy, because in Washington State they have to go there first. The other thing about it is it's a government record, a government database. And if they're searching through the facial recognition software, I take it they're looking for someone, right? I mean, they would have to have a picture saying, this is the person of interest we're looking for. Let's find them. And then they'd go through the database. I don't really see what's so jarring about that, right? I mean, I feel like it's not like you have to. I mean, I recommend getting a driver's license, but I feel like that's one of those things where, you know, it's like if I turn my fingerprints over for a government job, which has happened before, I would assume that, you know, for as long as they have those fingerprints, they're going to look through. And if I was dumb enough to go commit a crime or be wanted in something while I had those fingerprints out, well, then, you know, they're going to search through their database and lo and behold, I'm there. And I wouldn't feel like that's the invasion of my privacy or everybody else's. Even if I hadn't done anything and I found out they compared my fingerprints to see if I was one of the people there, well, that would make sense to me. So am I wrong? I mean, is there some huge invasion of privacy here, or is this something else? No,
I think that's a good point. Yeah,
exactly. And that brings us to the second.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
Story's kind of, it's both heartbreaking and heartwarming. Parents of a new baby that is struggling in the NICU unit, the intensive care unit for newborns at the Evergreen Health Medical Center in Kirkland. They were struggling as these new parents dealing with this illness. A mom, Katrina Thompson, talked with Cairo 7 Television.
We found out early on in the pregnancy that she had one bad kidney.
But she came into the world facing more complications.
Her blood pressure started spiking.
So you can imagine how worried these new parents are. New father, Shane Thompson, was heading out away from the hospital to get some things from home because, as you know, these parents have to be with their child. They're going to be staying at the hospital. He's dashing off to go get some additional materials at home.
I'm going
to
go home and grab a change of clothes for us and come back. I'm standing in this spot and there's no car. I don't know, you know, why somebody would do something like that.
So somebody stole their car while they're in visiting their sick baby. And here's the strange thing. It's a 1992 white Honda Accord. Wouldn't you assume that the 1992 white Honda Accord would be kind of theft-proof at this point? You know, like thieves would just go after something of higher value.
It's like the second most stolen, or maybe the first.
Are you serious?
Honda Accords and Toyota Camrys. Because there's something about the older ones. You can just do two little things and you've started it.
Well, I knew that they were, I didn't know about the easy start, but I knew that they were stolen a lot. I just assumed that it was newer models because you'd want to get some cash for the risk.
No, I had a similar car, like a 93, and it was stolen three times.
Huh. Was it white?
No.
So this poor guy gets out of the hospital, his baby's in intensive care, and the car is gone. And they just bought this thing.
Really did quite rock our whole everything, because I'd only had the car for 3 weeks, and I bought it specifically for our daughter, Olivia.
They wanted a four-door so they could put the baby in and out of the car, and you know, as a parent, I can assure you that the four-door is essential. I had my two-door, it drove me crazy trying to get the car seat in there, and you're trying to get the babies out. It's difficult. So they buy this car, it's stolen while they're at the hospital. What to do next?
I went from thinking how cruddy people are and how could they do that to just being humbled and amazed that the generosity of the well wishes, the donations and the kindness of people that I don't even know. I mean, I look at it and I think, well, how is it that we can be so lucky and then just have such a huge upswing and kind of restore your faith in people.
Now, here's the great thing. So while he and his wife are both crying and feeling like, you know, once life hammers you with one thing you're dealing with, which is the all-important baby with struggling with illness, next thing you know, your car is stolen. Well, how are you going to replace it? You've got financial challenges. Next thing you know, people find out about it, and they've got over $5,000 in 5 days, thanks to a Facebook fundraiser for them. And I'm sure after the Cairo television airing of this story, that number increased. Big help came from Ford of Kirkland. The company closed the price gap for the new family and sent them off with a Kia Sportage. So, again, community and all these other people and this dealership coming forward to help them replace that car with something even better. It's great. Now, here's what I like about it, too, is so many times when a story like this happens and somebody steals the car, you know, somebody does some horrible crime, in this case, stealing a car from this new couple who has a baby in the intensive care at the hospital. People say, what does this say about our society? Our society's gone to hell in a handbasket. And I always point and say, our society is not measured by the criminal, okay? The reaction to the crime, if people shrug their shoulders and said, you know what, happens all the time, it's all we can do. You know, too bad for them, moving on. That it might say something about us. Instead, what happened is people respond by saying, oh my gosh, I'm going to reach out and help them. You know, the community responds, this Ford dealership responds and says, you know what, we're going to make sure that they're taken care of. And they end up better off than they were at the beginning. And so what was intended for evil magnifies the good in everybody. That's what says a lot about our society. It says a lot about our state. Lot about the people in our community. Not the person who stole the car, but the reaction to that theft. And so, you know, again, so when people get down or you're feeling like, gosh, I've read about this crime story, it just says everything about our community these days, that's a horrible way of looking at the world. Instead, look at how people respond and try to help and assist and show some love toward those who are suffering or who have been victimized by something. That's how we are defined. And that brings us to the next big lead.
The big lead, big local.
In Shoreline, there's a possible hate crime. Graffiti was spray painted outside the walls of a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Shoreline over the weekend. It was on the walls and doors outside the Mormon Church on 30th Avenue Northeast. Most of the graffiti was symbols, but one message said, F the Mormons. And so I can't tell from this if the symbols, because they say most of it was symbols, and then they have these symbols for the F-bomb there, you know what I mean? Did it actually say the full F-bomb?
Which yeah, it was blurred so. Out.
But you know what I mean? The way it's written, it looks like it could have just been somebody, could have been somebody who was, say, LDS, writing the F-bomb, you know, because they're using symbols for it. Anyway, this, because they're targeting the church for being the church, it moves it from misdemeanor to a possible felony hate crime because they're targeting the Mormons for their religion. By the way, my church was vandalized too just the other day. It seems to be spreading around, and that was in Tacoma. I couldn't figure out what the graffiti means. I keep meaning to ask some police friends of mine as to if there's some kind of symbol there. It's kind of weird.
Was it
writing?
A tag or something?
Yeah, it looks like a weird tag. I took a picture of it. It was like J.D. or J.K., then Jews something. It was a weird thing. Anyway, couldn't figure out what it meant. But I do know that we got to figure out how to get it off the brick because it's super annoying, and I hate that kind of thing. And you don't want to leave vandalism on because then, of course, more people come along to tag and vandalize. And it's horrible because the building was beautiful. So LDS Church looking for those who would spray paint and you know, the great thing about it, though, is every neighbor, they react with horror. Every neighbor is saying this shouldn't have happened. This is not something we want in the community. So, again, it's not a reflection of the community. It's a reflection of some person within the community that's got issues and could probably use a few lessons in how to deal with people and how to be a generally nicer person from the very church that they vandalized there. And it's a shame. But it's not the only place getting vandalized of late.
The Big Lead Update.
Police are seeking an arsonist after two fires have damaged the Thomas Jefferson High School gym. This is the second time in 5 days where two minor fires were inside the Thomas Jefferson High School, believed to be caused by arson, according to South King Fire and Rescue officials. There are two fires. The school gymnasium is under construction, but the fires have caused in excess of $100,000 worth of damage. The first fire was on Monday, July 1st, second fire July 4th. Made me wonder if this is a fireworks-related. Was somebody thinking it was a good idea to light fireworks in there? Is it more of a malicious thing? Either way, the Arson Alarm Foundation may award up to $10,000 to anyone who provides information leading to a conviction in the case. Construction crews are currently working to do site work on the school's rebuild. So, you know, again, it's the kind of thing where somebody decides, well, gee, I want to go burn something. It's 4th of July. You can light off fireworks all over the place and not actually burn anything down, and you can satisfy your arson urge. You don't have to go and damage other people's property and other things. If you find yourself feeling like this is the kind of thing that you must do, what you should do is go immediately to the police or a mental health organization and say, you know what, I'm having these kind of urges to do harm to other people's property or other people. You know, and I actually have read of criminals that have done that, which is the best kind of criminal because it shows that they actually want to change. Whereas if you're just holding on to it, nursing these kinds of desires, well, then you don't really want to change. You just want to cause more problems for folks. But, you know, the whole Como News had the report on the Mormon church being vandalized.
This was discovered yesterday afternoon when parishioners showed up here at the church. And tonight, law enforcement is taking this very seriously.
Members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Shoreline found derogatory words spray painted on a door that leads to their place of worship.
This is potentially a hate crime, and that's what we're investigating it as.
In at least half a dozen places on the exterior of the church, located at 30th Avenue Northeast, spray-painted graffiti.
Now, either way, whether it's the hate crime or just being obnoxious, they've created a situation where good people are going to have to spend more money just to fix the place where they go to feel safe. And it's the same with the school. The school is a place where people go to feel safe. They're sending their kids there. It's a community place. It's if there was a disaster in some way around, you want the schools to be in good shape so that people can meet there and have a place for shelter. So it becomes a crime against all when a place like either of these places is attacked in that way. And it's sad and pathetic. And speaking of sad and pathetic, that brings us to
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
It's truly bizarre that King Five had the report on the National Park Service airlifting goats from one part of Washington State to the other part of Washington State via helicopter.
What happens is a master hunter either darts the mountain goat from the air or they use a net gun to capture them. Then they sedate them and basically put them in a big sling, put a face mask over them so they can't really see what's going on, and then fly them to the area where they're then put into a truck and transported to a processing area. As you can see here, we saw the kid, the young mountain goat, being worked on by the veterinarian. They do all kinds of things from DNA samples, blood testing, put a tag in their ears. This is not the only time this is going to happen. These mountain goats are going to continually be relocated from Olympic National Park to the Cascades in an effort to reduce the problems that they have created here. One thing we learned today is that they really like salt, and human beings have become a source for salt, and that's created conflict between the mountain goats and humans and has even led to a fatality. The other issue, though, is that they're just hurting the terrain here. They're not native species to this area, and so because they eat all of the grasses, they have effects on other wildlife.
I mean, especially when the population grew to over 1,000 animals, they're having impacts on this fragile alpine and subalpine ecosystem that did not evolve with this level of herbivory or type of herbivory. And as a National Park Service unit, our management mandate is to manage the ecosystems that we're in charge of in as much of the natural functioning state as possible.
So what I don't understand is why not just issue a few hunting permits? I mean, there's huge expenses going into getting rid of these animals. And if you could just issue a few hunting permits, you could do it by a lottery system. They would bring in thousands and thousands of dollars for, you know, the parks all have huge backlogs of upkeep and other things. Why not do it that way? I mean, they could have a lottery system. The hunters would go in there. They would harvest whatever number of animals that are required, because they say the population's just grown too much. Well, you know, there's a solution for that, and it doesn't involve helicopters and fancy stuff. By the way, a little side note, in the MyNorthwest.com story, they point out that the dart that's laced with carfentanil, the opioid the DEA classifies as 10,000 times more potent than morphine. You better keep that away from Seattle. Keep that off the streets. Anyway, crazy to me that we're moving the goats when other cheaper money-raising solutions are available. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Before we get into the awesome audio of the day, we've got a Monday Mariners giveaway here on the Dory Monson Show. The first caller right now at 888-973-5476 will win two tickets to the July 20th Mariners game against the Angels. Mariners' first Funko night of the season is getting the Hall of Fame treatment, and the first 20,000 fans will receive this Edgar Martinez pop collectible. You can find tickets at Mariners.com. And don't forget, you can hear the entire Angels series on 710 ESPN Seattle. So first caller right now at 888-973-5476 will win that pair of tickets to the July 20th Mariners game against the Angels. All right, that brings us to...
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio Clips of the Day.
Number two, after winning the World Cup, the Team USA's Megan Rapinoe says she does not feel respected by FIFA, the Women's World Cup organization.
I think everyone is ready for this conversation to move to the next step. I think we're done with the are we worth it, should we have equal pay, is it, you know, is the markets the same, yada, yada. Everyone's done with that. I mean, we put on as... all players, I'm saying, every player at this World Cup, put on the most incredible show that you could ever ask for. We can't do anything more. I don't think that we feel the same level of respect, certainly that FIFA has for the men and just in general. It certainly is not fair. We should double it now and then use that number to double it for, you know, or quadruple it for the next time, obviously. I'm not saying that our prize money is $450 million this time or next time around. You know, I understand that for, you know, a lot of different reasons, the men's game financially is far advanced than the women's game. But if you really care about each game in the same way, are you letting the gap grow?
So here's the problem with what Rapinoe's saying here. One is when she says, hey, we've put on this top quality game. It's every bit as good as the guys. Look, I don't know. I'm not a huge soccer fan myself, but I will say this, that there's market forces at work that will tell you the value. And if the difference here is 440 versus 30, so the men's World Cup prize pool is 440 million, the women's is 30 million, there's a reason for that. And so I'm not saying, you know, I support women's athletics. I admire their skill. I admire their dedication and their ferocity. It looks like the popularity is on the upswing so that the sport can continue to grow in terms of ticket sales and revenue and endorsement deals and other things. But, you know, there's a lot of things outside of just the stadium and outside of just the sport where outside organizations are asking people for certain endorsement deals. Some might be worth more than others. Some are based on a niche audience or what have you. But the men's soccer is dominating. And that means that the viewers and others are dominating. So the men's soccer is worth more. It's not because it's not a sexist thing. It's a basic sport thing. It's a basic market function. And so just while I'm sure there are other aspects of women's sports where there's the possibility that that women or the women's side of one particular sport might be worth more than the men's side, and it wouldn't be necessarily be a sexist thing. And it also doesn't mean that it's a difference in respect. Again, it becomes a market thing. If there was some kind of outside requirement that the pay would have to be equal, it would simply destroy the sport. Not because, you know, that somehow the players would change, but because if you inflate the cost of running one sport beyond what it will bear, then it means people will just stop supporting it. It would just be canceled, you know, and or some other competitor's going to go in and they're going to be offering the actual value for because you'd have to take money away or take it from the men's sport. You know, they would just be offering different value. It's like, you know, there are women football players that would argue, hey, well, what we do is, you know, we're in our athletic prime, we're doing our best possible, but it's not about how great of an athlete you are for your gender. It's about all kinds of different market forces in play. So, you know, I applaud the fact that the U.S. team won, that the sport is on the rise, that they have people have a number of role models they can look to and say, hey, look, there's a ferocity of competition that, you know, that means that female athletes don't have to they don't have to be contained, you know, or limited in terms of their desire for achievement. All of those things are great. But I think the focus on the unfairness is the wrong way to go. The focus should be on building and what's possible, not on this idea that there's an outside force making things unfair.
Number one.
Those are sounds from a brawl breaking out among Disneyland members over the weekend. In and of itself, that's not that unusual, except for the, hey, Disneyland part. It's supposed to be the happiest place on earth. Instead, you have family members that are duking it out, men punching women. You have people knocking another lady off of a motorized scooter. The whole thing became bizarre. The families were uncooperative with police, so nobody was initially arrested. But lo and behold, we have social media. And now there's video of this brawl. By the way, that was the first thing I thought when I saw that they're uncooperative. I thought, well, why don't police just look at the social media video? And apparently it wasn't up yet. But give it 24 hours now. The video's up. People are watching it, including police. And what the video shows is a guy wearing a red shirt taking the first swing at a woman, but they call it the first swing, but she first spits in his face. And I feel like of course, this is where gender distinctions matter. Because if a guy spit in another guy's face and he got decked, I'd say, well, you got what you're asking for. When a woman spits in another guy's face, I feel like he should have called authorities, but you don't hit a woman.
And that's not a minor brawl. It's a real brawl. I was shocked. I thought it was just sort of a fun, you know, family having a little skirmish.
Beverly Hillbillies style.
No, it's a real
zany.
Knockdown. I mean, literal knockdown brawl.
Yeah, kids screaming. A guy is grabbing a woman by the hair and dragging her across the pavement. The whole thing becomes super ugly, super fast. You know, and then you would just want to ask each one of these parents. You want to sit them all down in the lineup, preferably, and just say, look, you know, at what point did you think maybe I shouldn't do this in front of the kids, right? How many kids have to be present at a Disneyland event before you think, you know, maybe brawling isn't the best idea here, you know? And before you say, oh, gosh, you couldn't, what if somebody spat in your face? I'd say, well, I've had bad things happen to me before. You know, I've been slapped super hard in the face. I almost hit back, but I was able to stop myself. This was back in junior high, you know, and I've had things happen since then. We were doing a live radio event at one point. I was working for another guy, and I had a lady in a motorized scooter ramming my shins till they bled because she so badly wanted to disrupt the live read. So I was just standing there, just smashing in, vowing, you know, to fight the evil man represented by the show I was working for, and I just thought, yeah, this is so civil. But what do you do? Well, I just stood there and waited for the authorities there. I'm not going to hit – you don't – look, I mean, the whole thing is you got somebody motorized scooter. I'm not going to harm her in any way. And if, you know, my shins will heal. It did hurt, by the way, because the machine was large. But, you know, again, the guys involved in this, they need to be sat down and men need to talk to them and say, hey, part of being a man is not hitting a woman. You know, that's rule number one. And then everybody else needs to be sat down and say, like the mom here that spat in the guy's face. Look, mom, you're at Disneyland. That's classless. And you're begging for problems with a bunch of kids present. You know, you feel proud of yourself now? Is everybody's time better? You know, so much for the noises of the happiest place on earth.
Call security!
Good for the crowd, by the way, for stepping in and separating some of these people before somebody got hurt even worse. David Bowes in for Dory Monson. And Awesome Audio brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. Spent a couple of funny cuts from President Trump today. We don't have the audio right now, but he was chastising the British ambassador that called the Trump administration inept and dangerous. And Trump's like, we are not happy with that man. You can just picture how work at the British embassy might have changed. The working relationship might have changed with that special friendship once news leaked of his attitude toward the president. Also very big in the news today is the arrest of the billionaire Jeffrey Epstein. By the way, that name is just ruining Welcome Back, Carter for me. You know, remember Epstein on Welcome Back, Carter? You know, not the guy played by John Travolta, but one of the other characters there. It's just kind of every time I mention the story, I'm picturing that guy as an old man. And, you know, he's made it from Welcome Back, Carter. Now he's a billionaire and a total perv. But anyway, in the real life story, this Jeffrey Epstein has been very politically connected to President Clinton and Trump. He's under arrest. The thing I like about the story is it shows the law does apply to everybody. Yeah, you got a sweetheart deal before, but the feds are newspapers didn't let it go. It shows a need for journalism, for good journalism that actually investigates and follows through. The FBI followed up on that. And now a guy who thought himself to be beyond, you know, beyond the law is now facing the law. And that's a great thing about this country is the law really does apply to everybody. However, this is the end of the show. And this is typically the time when we look for other signs, not signs of hope, but other signs.
Today's sign that the end is near.
One of those signs would be that there's been some advances in making sure that the meat you eat might come from a test tube. The Daily Mail reporting on new cultured meats. Researchers are taking tissues from animals, breaking through, cultured and able to grow meat like a... Remember in science class, you'd have those Petri dishes and you try and grow, you know, mold or something? In this case, your meat would grow that way. They would have what they're able to do is isolate animal cells, meat cells. They put them in this little dish. They feed the cells, and then the cells cover the entire petri dish. But they're only one cell, apparently, according to the story here, they're only one cell thick. So it's the world's thinnest steak cut there. But the hope is that they'll be able to kind of mush all this stuff together and be able to create meat without the need for animals. When you think about it, animals have to produce the hide, the bones, you know, brains and hooves and all the stuff that parts that they say they don't need, although I will say I did read a story once about all the parts of the cow they do use, and it is fascinating. But if you just want the meat, there might be a faster way to do it, and it's through these petri dishes. The problem is there's no structure to it. They don't have the blood vessels and the muscular structure and the sinews. So it basically becomes a gooey mess, and they're trying to figure out, you know, what to do with that gooey mess and to try to find a way to fake it. And one of the ways they've done that is create this kind of – they grab this part of a mushroom, and it kind of creates a fake blood vessel-like substance, and then they're able to grow the meat along that blood vessel-like substance. And the hope is that they'll be able to create these, you know, the appearance of and the feel of and the sensation of a more structured meat, like a steak or a chop or something, with this kind of muscle sinew substitute, and have the meat grow around it, and you'll still be able to have it. So, you know, one way or the other, you're going to get your mushrooms. But it all starts with a frozen gel that can be freeze-dried in a vacuum at very low temperatures and then kind of pulled into a sponge-like material that they can grow the meat on. The whole thing has got to, you know, that Chick-fil-A cow that's like, eat more chicken, you know?
Yeah.
All these animals are going to be pointing to the petri dish at whoever is able to perfect this first. It's like, eat more of that stuff so that you don't. PETA right now has got to be beside themselves with joy. Although it's been my experience that when an organization devoted to one cause finds themselves, once they've won something, they'll just look for a new reason to exist rather than just to declare victory and go home, which is kind of a sad thing. And the second sign that the end is near brings us to Kentucky, where, as you'll recall, there was a massive, massive fire at the Jim Beam warehouse, which has left all kinds of problems for the Kentucky River, as barrels and barrels of Jim Beam pouring out into the river, leaving a cloud of death for the fish. Yeah. Apparently, all that Jim Beam is killing the fish. They show pictures of poor fish floating belly up in the river. The fish do well in the water, not so well with alcohol. And the Department of Fish and Wildlife say it's conducting assessments in an effort to get the full story on the fish kill count, but it continues to spread. More and more fish succumbing to alcoholism in the Kentucky River, all because of the alcohol abuse of not drinking enough of that Jim Beam.
Shut your damn mouth, because we're not tuning in to hear you. Not at all. You could be replaced in a drop, and so could the producer, and no one would miss you.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.